The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Thursday, July 17th, 2008, and this is episode number 137. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, as always, to bring you the best in MotoGP commentary and opinion and blather. So, you may notice that we're up a day earlier than usual. We normally come out on Fridays, and the reason for that is because I'm going to Laguna Seca, so I'll be driving down to Monterey. Yes, driving, not riding. I know, what a big wuss. But I'll be driving down to Monterey on Thursday. Won't be able to do the podcast then, so we're putting it up a day early. Going down there with high school buddy Mike, and going to meet up with Jules. He's going to hook up with us down there. My son is down there on the doing his defense language school training thing that's also in Monterey, so that's really cool. So we're going to meet up with him as well. It's going to be a great time. We're really, really looking forward to it. So for today's show, though, we did a really cool call with Jules, another call with Jules about Der Sachsenring, and kind of a review of the race and what happened and what it means on the championship and just some general sort of commentary and chit-chat and all that good stuff. We had a good time. I think it's a good call. I think you're going to enjoy it. Before we get to that, of course, we have a couple of little administrative notes. Got to send a couple of shout-outs. Big, giant thank you to Jim Garrison, who sent me some beer. This is awesome. This is the second time that Jim's given me some beer, and I do really appreciate it, Jim. Some excellent choices this week. One of them was Hophenge from the Deschutes Brewery. It's an Imperial IPA, and hadn't had that one before. I thought I'd tried all the different Deschutes brands, but the Hophenge was some awesome stuff. It was mighty tasty. So for those of you that are fortunate enough to be in the area where you can try Deschutes beers, you need to try the wide variety of delightful beer that Deschutes makes. And there's enough of a commercial for Deschutes Brewery, but thank you very much, Jim Garrison. Oh, Jim also sent me a DVD of the Macau GP highlights from, I believe it's the 2005 season and that sort of thing, just a sort of a Macau DVD. And unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to watch it. I've been just swamped, but I'm going to get to that real, real soon because that is some manly stuff. Road racing, you know, as i.e. Isle of Man style, real road racing, but not in the even worse than the Isle of Man as far as safety is concerned. Rather than pubs and hedges and things like that lining the roads, there's just concrete walls and Armco and stuff like that. And I've seen photos of these guys coming around the corners with their shoulders literally scraping the wall, and it's just insane stuff. It certainly takes a much, much bigger man than I to do that kind of thing. But it's interesting to watch, even though most people think that they're kind of crazy. Other stuff that we had going on, David Hepburn and Travis Hinson were kind enough to donate to MotoGPOD. Thank you very, very much. I do appreciate it. This is the fourth time, by the way, for Travis. Really appreciate that. You're going above and beyond the call, helping to pay for the bandwidth, helping to pay for the Skype bill, all that kind of stuff that we, little expenses that we incur. I do really appreciate it. It's really, really cool to know that people like the show and are willing to donate and all of that. And I just really appreciate it, you guys. Thanks a lot. Let's see. Other administrative stuff that we've got going on. Been a little busy this week. Haven't been able to keep up on the email as tightly as I'd like to. I've had a lot of good ones. I really appreciate it, you guys, and I'd like to read them out here on the show and everything, but I haven't quite prepped for that. So I'm saving some of these stuff back. We're going to be covering that here in the summer break that we've got coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about our CBS commentary, because for those of you here in the United States, you may have noticed that the broadcast was not on Speed, the usual channel. It was on CBS, and we had Greg White and Kevin Schwantz as announcers for that. CBS did an actual announcing team for the MotoGP race there in the Sachsenring, and I'm going to hold back a little bit on my opinions and judgment and whatnot until I sort of kind of collate what I think. My initial impression is, to be frank, I think they did a pretty good job. They did a much, much better job than last year, let's say it that way. And because if you remember last year, we had Jeff Metters and Kevin Schwantz doing it, and I did my Pepsi challenges of MotoGP commentary, where we compared their commentary with Eurosport and BBC and some of the other broadcasters and all that sort of thing. And this year was a huge improvement. Of course, there's always room for still more improvement, and I'll have some comments on all of that. But overall, I think that it was definitely a step in the right direction. And thank you to CBS for broadcasting it on over-the-air television so that we might be able to get some MotoGP fans recruited from people that don't normally watch it, and also for going to the effort to make a special announcing team rather than just running the Dorna commentary, which is good. You know, Nick Harris and Matthew Roberts and all those guys. But it's just it's kind of nice that when they do it sort of customized for the American market. So I thought it was pretty good, and we'll have more comments on that coming up soon. So enough blathering on about that. Thanks again very, very much to Jim Garrison, David Hepburn, and Travis Henson. Really, really do appreciate it. Jules and I, like I said, are going to be down there at Laguna Seca. We really hope to meet anybody that is down there also. So if you happen to be listening to the show, you know, right before you're heading out one way or the other, you can catch it so that you're going to listen to it on the ride or your plane flight or however you are that you're getting to Laguna Seca, look for me. You know, I'll be wearing a MotoGP OD t-shirt. You've seen my picture. I'm on the website, tall guy, blonde hair. I'll be wearing sunglasses, probably a hat, that sort of thing. So if you see a guy running around in, like, you know, desert camo cargo shorts and a MotoGP OD t-shirt, it's probably me. Just sort of stop me and say, hey, are you Bob? And I'll say, yes, I am. And we can say hi and that sort of thing. We don't have any official events, get-togethers planned or anything like that. I'm kind of going down there really to be selfishly honest about it. I'm going down there for myself. I want to hang out with my friends and just enjoy a fantastic race of motorcycling and all of that good stuff. But we are going to be recording and getting some sights and sounds and all that kind of thing and some material for future shows. So it's going to be a good week. And again, I do really hope to be able to say hi to some of you guys. And I know that I'm going to be meeting up with some people that I've already met up with. There's quite a few people that are going and, you know, we'll sort of hook up through the weekend and say hello, maybe have a beer, that kind of thing. All right. That about covers it for the pre-show stuff. Why don't we go ahead and get on with the call with Jules talking about the Sachsenring. All right, we got Jules on the phone again. How are you doing this week, Jules?
I'm doing pretty good. It's going to be an exciting week.
Oh, indeed it is. Yes, we have Laguna to prepare for, so we're recording our call a little earlier in the week than we normally would because we have to make sure, you know, we've got Laguna to go to. So Thursday night, I'll be down there at Laguna Thursday night, so I'm not going to be doing the show on Thursday night. I'll do it earlier this week, so we got to do the call this week earlier. Et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to talk about Sachsenring, Der Sachsenring, which was an extremely eventful race. And I know that you, Jules, not that you're not a wet race guy, but it's like you hate the sort of not really wet, not really dry kind of business.
I like all the wet races. I just don't like, you know, the is it wet or is it dry?
Right.
What should I go out on? Should I go switch bikes? You know.
Right, right. And in this case, we did not have that problem at all because it was very clearly quite wet.
Pretty much the whole day since warm up.
Yeah, it was, and I mean that track looked bad. I was amazed. So this is it was a very eventful race. So we're going to go more along the line of lap by lap rather than going down the finish like we've been doing the last few times because of the way this is going to work.
Let's just also mention that this I did not expect Casey Stoner to have such an incredible start this weekend. You know, Sachsenring is not a Ducati track, really. Although they're having good results by Ducati there, they've been kind of, you know, random. Last year wasn't so good for the Bridgestones in general. So I didn't expect him out of the gate. The guy just was blowing the field away. It was pretty ridiculous.
He was like, on fire. I thought we weren't going to mention Casey Stoner, and I thought we certainly weren't going to mention anything along the lines. We didn't expect him to be, you know, the talent that he is.
right.
We love Casey Stoner on the show. Actually, I do. I can't help but mention this, that all this email that we were getting, and please, no more emails, folks. I do admire Casey Stoner. I know he's a fantastic racer, and it's just that it was also there are other things. Then that's all we were trying to express.
Nicely done.
You like that?
You somehow managed to avoid saying but.
I did. All right. Yes, we got the suggestion to not say but. Casey Stoner's great, but yeah.
Actually, this weekend it was no, there were no buts about.
There were absolutely no buts. He was on fire. What was the Friday free practice gap was just enormous, and the qualifying gap, yeah, and it was insane. The qualifying gap, three and a half tenths, you know, 3,500ths of a second.
What was really amazing about the qualifying run was that he already had the pole position, and he went out there again and just cracked it again. And then he went out again and cracked it again.
Just to sort of drive the nail in any coffin, you know. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like, look what I can do. And,
and then, you know, he'd go out there. He'd sit inside for a little while, go back out, do two laps, come back in, sit around for a little while. It's just amazing.
Kind of classic Casey Stoner, but he normally sort of waits until it looks like there's some danger that he might be no longer the fastest, or he has lost his fastest, or whatever. And then he goes out and clocks one in.
Right.
But yeah. No, he was. He was definitely on fire. That's a big gap nowadays for qualifying. If you'll notice, let's talk about qualifying. But Stoner was on pole. Pedrosa was in second, 3/3500ths of a second behind Stoner. Colin Edwards, remarkable qualifying effort in third place there, finishing out
actually in second pretty much until the very end, and Pedrosa put on a really good lap. I think about 4 minutes from the end.
Right, and managed to pip him out and take that spot. And the gap between Pedrosa and Edwards was 1/10, almost exactly 1/10. And that is a more sort of customary gap in qualifying these days. You know, we've seen...
Especially at this kind of a track.
Exactly. You know, this is not a high-speed track.
It's a very short track.
Right? Very short. Not a lot of big straights and things like that. No, it's very technical as well. I mean, you have to flip-flop that motorcycle... hardcore in some of these corners, and and just, you know, the huge long lefts and rights that we've got going on are it's an impressive effort all around by these guys.
Really striking thing about Stoner was that there were guys who were faster in the first two sections, but he was just consistently fast, which means that. So, Sexton Ring, the first two sections take you basically to the top of the hill. And then you come down, you take a right, and you plunge down the hill and take a left at that corner where, like, most of the passing really happens. And that's the end of Section 3, and then you go up the hill again. Then you go through a short little straight, then you take another left up the hill, and that's the straight. And in those two sections, everybody else was falling off pace, whereas Casey was actually continuing to extend his lead in the laps, in the times. And so that was, I think, the critical part of the track that nobody else figured out as well as he did.
Right. I agree. He was on fire, basically. And that hill, by the way, Jules hasn't seen the CBS commentary, so this will be news for Jules, but that's the hill that was described by Greg White as being just like the corkscrew. And then Kevin Schwantz comes in and says, except that it's straight and about four gears higher.
Nice.
Yes,
otherwise, exactly the same.
Exactly. I thought I was looking in Laguna Seca.
Nice.
And we'll get to Greg White's commentary later a little bit. I actually didn't think it was that bad. All right. The other qualifying effort that I want to mention was Valentino Rossi, who qualified 7th. So a fairly poor for Rossi qualifying effort. But also, his lap was spoiled by Lorenzo. And there was a big old apology session and mea culpa and all of that from Lorenzo.
Yeah. But, you know, he was still that lap that he was on, he was only about maybe 1/10 of a second in that second section ahead of Stoner. And we know that lap after lap in the previous laps, he lost the time in the second two sections. So in the last two sections, I mean. So
I doubt he would have gotten pole.
I don't think he would have gotten pole. No. He probably would have gotten like two more positions or something like that.
Right. He might have at least been on the second row, possibly up on the first row. He guesstimated half a second, which would have put him well and truly on the first row. Actually would have put him second on the grid if it was a true half a second. But I find it
a little hard to believe.
I, of course, have my doubts, my contemplations of, you know, was it really that much of an accident on Lorenzo's part? You know, I don't know.
Really?
Well, isn't that sort of – maybe I'm that cynical. I guess I probably am. You know, I would like to think that Llorente wouldn't do something like that, but I don't put it completely out of the realm of possibility.
Well, let's go back to that when we're talking about the race and we're talking about one of the back markers.
Right on. That sounds good. So I think that pretty much, I mean, unless you had some other comments about qualifying that were all that relevant, you know, let's just jump right into the race. Soaking wet. It was an extremely wet race. And
especially at the start of the very end, because it kind of tapered off in the middle of the race, and we thought that we might – there was actually a dry – not a dry line developing, but there was definitely a line – you could see that the bikes were leaving, that was staying.
Right.
And then, but then it picked up again, and we had these rivers of water just going through the track. It was pretty, pretty treacherous.
It was. It was. I mean, the rooster tails coming off the back of the bikes were impressive. And you know, I mean, that riding in that is, yeah, you know, if you're back in the pack, you can't see crap. And, it's just, it is to watch that kind of race and to watch the kind of performance that we saw from these guys. It's always very, very impressive.
Yep.
Now, granted, they have, you know, super rain tires that just pump water like there's no tomorrow and offer excellent grip and everything. But still, I mean, come on, these guys are, you know, so good. Colin Edwards got a fantastic start, and unfortunately, the camera angle sort of changed, so you couldn't kind of see what happened.
But yeah, exactly.
It was a little bit like, what happened? Wow, where did Pedrosa come from? You know, because Edwards, I almost thought he jumped it, because he was just bam out of the gate, and then coming into the first corner, it was Pedrosa, and right. I was a little puzzled of what happened, and I was hoping they would show a replay, and they never did.
They never did, and actually on the Eurosport feed, there was. Complete confusion about who it was that was in front because of the rain. They couldn't see the number, and they thought it was actually Nicky Hayden that somehow got up there.
Yeah, which would have been kind of a miracle because he qualifies eighth.
Yeah, because from the front of the grid, it looked like Danny did not get a very good start. It looked like it was Colin Edwards and Stoner and I think the Pugnay who looked like – and the Vizioso, obviously, who looked like they got good starts – and then suddenly there's this Repsol Honda up front. So they were thinking, oh, maybe we missed it. And they were saying, Nicky Hayden, no, wait, that's number two. That's Danny Pedrosa. Look at that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how it kind of was for me was, you know, you sort of, what you saw was a little bit like, where did he come from? And I don't know. He just something, you know, something clicked. So Pedrosa.
Well, he's been starting fantastic all year, so it's not a surprise that he started well, but it is.
It's a surprise, though, that he made up so much ground compared to Colin so quickly and all of that. Because, I mean, especially when you saw the start, it was like, you know, wow, freaking Colin was out of there like a rocket. And and it just, obviously, Pedrosa was just that much more rockety. So, because Pedrosa put in a. Shocking performance there for how many laps?
And five.
It was just, I mean, his gap was up to 7.5 seconds. And I was just like, goodness, you know, this guy is just checking out. And then, yeah, so then he crashed. and that was...
Well, it should be noted that he was up... over a second by the end of the first lap.
Yes.
And on Eurosport feed, they were saying it was just ridiculous.
It was. I think at the end of the third lap, it was up to 5 seconds. Yeah. I mean, he was just checking out. It's like, you know, no sort of, oh, I've got a comfortable gap or anything like that. He just kept pushing it. And unfortunately, that bit him in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he should have. And this was discussed on the CBS commentary that we had with Greg White and Kevin Schwantz a little bit of like, you know, should he have been pushing that hard? And Kevin Schwantz was, well, you know, probably not. because
well, duh.
Yeah.
Hindsight.
Pretty much. Yeah, hindsight is 20/20. The thing is, you know, Danny had done that corner 5 times previously and was okay. And, you know, it just, that's how rain works.
Yeah, well, he you know, I think he was getting a little too comfortable. This is what caught out, I remember there was a very famous race 2005, Sete Gibernau at Estoril was leading the race, and it started raining. That's the downside of being the first guy in the rain, is that you're checking out the conditions by yourself. You don't have a guy in front of you that's like, oop, I just saw him slip and slide. I'm going to be watching out in that section, you know?
Yes, yes, this is true. On the other hand, you can see those sections, which And by that fifth lap, Stoner couldn't see Pedrosa most of the time.
That's right.
Yeah, he was gone.
The track has a lot of elevation changes, and a lot of the camera angles really showed you, like, you know, Pedrosa taking a corner, and then from behind the hill would come Stoner. Stoner, who went into second position on the second lap, so it wasn't like he was fighting through the field either.
Stoner was leading the rest. There. Yes, and yeah. He got a good start, and he picked up past Colin Edwards, and did we see that on the? On the broadcast, I can't remember if we saw that.
Yeah, he went past Dovizioso on the second lap, because Dovizioso actually also got past Colin by the end of the first lap.
Right. Now I recall. Yes, you're right. And actually, the first lap was Pedrosa, Dovizioso, Stoner, Edwards, and you're right. So Stoner picked up that position, and yeah, he was turning in.
I almost forgot there was, because Lorenzo was fifth on the first lap, and then he was passed by Valentino Rossi on the second lap, and then he crashed. He was the first crasher,
right? Which spoils my right on two picks. But
you want to hear something crazy, by the way? That I picked after talking to you, I actually picked Stoner to win and Rossi to place, and I actually put Danny in to be the first DNF.
Really?
And my reasoning was, like, because this would play so perfectly into Casey Stoner's hand, and it's like his season is coming alive, and it, like, we were talking, you know, 3 weeks ago, that all it's going to take is for, you know, a bad race from one race from Rossi and one race from Pedrosa, where they don't score many points, and bam, two races in a row, Rossi doesn't score enough points in, well, he scored a couple of points in Assen, and then Pedrosa, right, no points in Saxon Ring,
right?
Crazy.
And now Stoner is 20 points back. Is it? Where's
yep,
he at?
Yeah. Just 20 points.
Yeah, and you know, he's, yeah, and so it is closing right up there. And if Stoner continues on his charge, then yeah, because I picked right on Stoner and Rossi win in place, but of course my first to retiree was Randy Pune, and I failed miserably in that regard, because
he actually finished okay.
He did. He finished the race. I know. So okay. Well, we should probably go down a little bit more of our incident by incident sort of a thing going on. Like, you know, we've already covered that Pedrosa crashed on lap five, and it was like, you know, oh my god, you know, of a sort of a thing, because the camera had actually gone
back to look for Stoner.
Right. Back to look for Stoner. Then all of a sudden they switch to the camera on the, you know, the ass cam on Pedrosa, and you see that he's crashing. Right, it's like, oh no. And so it was a little bit of a shocker there going on. And they asked Kevin Schwantz on the CBS feed, they had a quick post race interview thing. Schwantz asks Stoner, and I thought the question was a little clumsily worded, and probably is going to feed Stoner's, you know, the pros hates me attitude. But Kevin Schwantz says, did you see Pedrosa crash? You know, a little bit like, you know, wow, you know, let me hear your comments about Pedrosa crash. But basically Stoner said he did not, but he did see the bike, you know, tumbling through the gravel. So he knew right away that now he was number one. Because I was kind of wondering that too. Is it's like, is he going to have to see this on the pit board, or does he know, et cetera, et cetera? Because there were sections where he was far enough away that he couldn't see him.
Yeah, but he watches the big TV screens.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. They all do that as well. You're right. Yeah. And, so yeah, he would have. Yeah, you're right. So that's that. Not though that Stoner. Not to get ahead of ourselves too much, but I want to mention this while it's on my mind. You know, Stoner basically. So now he's in the lead, and he was building up a pretty good lead. Let's see.
He was about 4.5 seconds ahead of Rossi at one point.
Yeah, he kept, you know, he was doing okay. But then, like, so Rossi started kind of edging it up, got fast lap of the race, picked up like 0.8 in one lap on Stoner. And you're thinking, and this was around, if I recall correctly, without looking at my charts and all that business.
Mid-race.
What's that?
It was probably a mid-race, and there was plenty of time left.
Yeah, mid-race, exactly. So, because I knew, I was thinking, oh, well, you know, with that kind of pace, Rossi will catch him up, right?
Yep.
But the thing is on the next lap, Stoner, you know, is like, no, you don't, and put in his own fast lap and pulled back that gap, most of it. And it's and he basically sort of did that on command. You know, Rossi would try, and Stoner would put in his own response. And it was just it was impressive to see. Excellent race management from both of them. And eventually Rossi basically went into the, I'm going to take second because it's just, you know, I don't want to crash sort of a mode.
But those guys were in a different class, because there was a moment where Vermeulen, who took third place, who was cutting through the field like, I mean, we knew he's a good wet rider and
right.
He hates to be called that, but he is a very good wet weather rider. Or maybe he's just basically one of those guys who rides well in any conditions, and this is the equalizer, so, you know, the conditions are the equalizer, so that's where he can shine.
Right.
But whatever the reason, he ended up being third, and he had a great battle with De Angelis for probably like, you know, two-thirds of the race.
Yes.
He brought him with him when they both passed Colin on the same lap, and they just kept fighting all the way to the line. But he was actually gaining on Rossi for a little while, but Rossi cranked it up, Casey cranked it up, and Vermeulen and De Angelis could not. So I think it was like an 8-second gap about 10 laps from the end, and I think it finished with like 14 seconds, right?
Yeah, 14 seconds behind the Stoner, right, almost 10, 11 behind Rossi, yeah. And they were, because Vermeulen, you're right, even though he doesn't like to be known as a wet weather specialist and all of that, he does. The guy does well in the rain. And again, actually, you know, going back, thinking over in my head the CBS commentary, and I keep bringing it up, I thought it was pretty good. Because, one of Schwantz's things said was, one of the comments that they made was that, you know, you don't have to love the rain because nobody really loves it out there, but you just have to like it better than the other guy, you know, sort of a thing, or be more comfortable than the other guy, and you have to make it your friend.
That's a good way to put it.
Right. Because, everybody hates it, right? But if you can just hate it less than the other guy, then you've got an advantage. And the guys that are classics at this, Vermeulen, West, also wet rider in our group here, they did well because this was a wet race. Ant West
Ant West was doing great until he crashed, and then he got the bike up and still managed to finish in front of, I think he crashed and was still up in front of Elias after he got
up. Right, Toseland, Elias, and Hayden. He finished 10th after a crash. So yes, right. He pushed it a little too hard and everything, but he was doing super well before that. And it is the equalizer. Well, we're all over the map here, so where should we go from here?
Well, let's talk about Nicky Hayden's race, because he went into the pits on lap 7.
Yes. Did you get any details on that? I have not yet.
All I know is that he replaced his rear tires. He did not change bikes. Like, if he was changing bikes, they'd have to change compounds.
So he'd have to go to the intermediate, yeah.
Yeah, but he stayed on the same bike. They just replaced the rear tire, and he said he felt better. But it was something to do, with yet again, like an electronics thing. You know, some warning light came on or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. Hayden's done so well at Sachsenring before, and there was so much sort of, chitter chatter about that he'll do okay, and this is good for him, and blah blah blah. He's been inside of the podium so much lately, yada. But he qualified 8th. Which is not, a disastrous qualifying, but Hayden's not exactly what I would call a wet weather specialist. I mean, he's okay, but he's not, he's not like Vermeulen or something that just shines in the wet. And
but this was definitely a technical issue.
He was
dead last right from the very first lap, and it was crap, and it was crap. And then he went into the pits. By the time he came out, he was already this track is so short that he was already in the midst of the pack.
Right.
And he kind of stayed out of the way. And then so he ended up being last, even after being lapped. And he got lapped a second time before the end of the race, So obviously, that's not Nicky Hayden's poor riding or anything like that.
No.
He had some serious, serious problems with the bike.
Some kind of issue going on. But he picked up 2 points. And and that's what, he's kind of was thinking is like, might as well stick it out there and pick up the points and
Absolutely.
All of that. So
And development time with his bike. I mean, you know, I mean, whatever the issues are, he wasn't having these problems with the spring valve, Honda. This is growing pains kind of thing, right?
I think so. You know, I mean, he's riding the bike that he was testing for so long, and he's happier on the pneumatic bike. But you're right that he... That's the
price he has to pay, basically. It's like
pretty much.
There's going to be a lot of stuff to work out with this engine, the electronics package that goes along with the engine.
Right.
I'm sure there's a lot more than just putting a bunch of valves, different valve system on there.
Oh, I'm sure there is, especially when you're talking, you know, pneumatic. Somehow that sounds is so sort of mysterious as far as how they make it work, you know, and there must be so much electronics going on that. Because, I mean, the difference between spring valves and Desmo, you know, at least it's still mechanical.
It's still mechanical, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, but the pneumatic thing, it's like, wow, you got to squirt this air, or how does it work, or what do they do? You know, there's all kinds of weird stuff going on. So,
weird stuff. That's mm-hmm. a good way to put it.
It is weird stuff. It's totally mysterious to me. I'm not an engine guy. You know, I like to sort of read about it and everything, and then I pretty much promptly forget it.
There were two other guys that were very impressive. One guy early in the race, Marco Melandri, came to the field. He's another guy who, in the rain, seems to sometimes just get it on. Like we'll never forget 2006 Australia race,
right?
Where he just completely dominated and came from behind. He was in, let's see the lap chart. He was in seventh when. And then he crashed, unfortunately. But he was all the way up to seventh position. So
right. From one of his better qualifying positions of the year, down in 16th.
Right. So, he was not 17th.
Huh?
He was not 17th.
It was not 17th, exactly. And there was no 18th because we're missing John Hopkins at this race. Right. Poor old Melandri. I really feel bad for the guy. I really do. And I mean, because now you know he was shut down from talking to the press at all at Assen. You know, it's like you're not allowed to talk to these people.
and you know, it's official now that he's going.
Oh, is it? I hadn't read that.
So here's the interesting thing. So there was a lot of talk that the reason why they haven't announced him leaving was because they were concerned about, you know, having to do a payout because he's actually has a 2-year contract with Ducati, so through the end of 2009.
Right.
But there is apparently a clause in the contract which says that mutual. No. If it's a mutual thing, if both parties decide, then then it's a different story. And apparently, you know, Marco is just
that makes it even more sad, dude. That's bad.
Well,
I understand.
There's the money thing, and then there's like the psychological thing. Do you want to just keep beating yourself up, or do you want to just get off the thing, take a little bit of time off, possibly get a ride, you know, with some other team? Like there was some talk about him going to Kawasaki to replace Hopkins, possibly, but there's just not enough money for Kawasaki to do that. But just take some time off and get your head together,
right?
Because. Grassini sounds like wants him back, actually. Remember, we were talking about this last time, and we were thinking that, where's he going to go? But it turns out that there's rumors that Grassini would take him back.
If they will, because he did well. It's just that he's not a Ducati rider. He's apparently not much of a Yamaha rider, but he did okay on the Honda. He really did.
Yep.
And speaking of replacements for Hopkins, you got the word that Hacking is going to replace Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And,
that's awesome.
Now, have you heard any other
word? Old man hacking.
Say again?
Old man hacking.
Yes. And have you heard any other word about Roger Lee Hayden? Is he going to be out there? Because that was the word a while ago before he cut off a finger and all of this other stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I went through all the news today, and I did not see a single mention of Roger
Lee. It's been like, you know, crickets, chirp, chirp, chirp.
Yeah.
As far as whether he's... Right. I don't think he's going to be out there.
Dang.
But are you checking
that's
something?
Too bad. No, I said, dang, that's too bad.
Yeah.
You're right. I haven't even thought about that because it hasn't popped up on my radar.
No. It's good to see these AMA guys getting a chance to, you know, race at Laguna, a track that they're familiar with and all of that. And also with the whole AMA meltdown, which there's been some news on that front that we are going to discuss eventually here. It's still, you know, a lot of these guys are looking for a ride. Somewhere. I don't think you're going to see Jamie Hacking with a MotoGP ride anytime soon, but it'll be nice. Well, they're actually going to see him next weekend, but it'll be good to see him out there at Laguna. So
we were talking about God, we're really all over the place.
We're way all over the place, and that's okay. Let's just go ahead.
Lap five. We should go back to lap five and Pedrosa's crash. There's actually a very good set of videos on MotoGP.com. If you have the subscription, you can watch some really amazing angles. Because there was a cameraman very close to where the bike slid into both Danny and the bike slid into the air fence. And man, that bike had so much inertia. Did you see what happened to it?
It was like buried in the air fence. I mean, he's not getting that out.
It climbed it. It climbed it.
Oh, it climbed it?
Rolled up it and then landed on top of it. It was amazing. And there's some really crazy angles. It's like one from down the straight, down from behind the air fence. So it's really worth seeing that. Unfortunate news is that he has – so they were worried about his ankle because he was complaining about his ankle, and they were worried that he may have fractured his ankle. His ankle is actually not so bad. It's sprained, which is really kind of – it could be just as bad.
Yeah. It's better than a fracture, I think.
But it's his left hand. He's got a couple of broken bones in his left hand, and it's inflamed, and there's a chance he won't ride at Laguna, which would really be
– bad.
And it would just turn this championship inside out because then it would just be Rossi against Stoner –
Right.
And we know how that's going, right now at least.
Right now, yes. It's pretty much ticking off the point.
Yeah, just like five here.
Yeah.
We've got nine races to go, so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, wow. Well, I hope he can, because Pedrosa actually does well at Laguna. And
eight races.
Yeah. Plus, we need as big a field as we can get. You know, we're suffering a lot of real serious injuries this year that are taking riders out for, you know, extended lengths of time.
In fact, Livio Supo said that, he wasn't saying this like as a Ducati guy, he's just saying as a race fan, he says with a field this small, they shouldn't give out points past the top 10 positions.
I think they probably need to redo the point structure, yeah. This was a point structure that was designed for 22 and 24 rider grids.
Exactly.
And yeah. And you're not going to, you know, with only 18 guys showing up and now 17 and then, you know, a wet race and everything. It's like, you know, yeah. I agree. So where to next?
The other rider I wanted to mention was Sylvain Guintoli, who
yes.
had a very good race. He started 15th and finished 7th?
Sixth,
because Colin Edwards crashed and gifted him that extra position.
Right.
So Colin crashed on lap 20. Which is kind of
looking for
a shame. He was kind of riding in a lonely fifth and crashed out.
Right.
What's interesting about Sylvain Guintoli, he apparently had a failure in his traction control system and shut it off.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. And then he fell back to a couple positions because he was getting used to riding the bike in a completely different way again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said he started having fun.
Wow. I hadn't heard that. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting.
Yeah. That's awesome. He also had the highest average top speed.
Wow. Do you know what that is?
269.7 kilometers an hour.
Okay.
This is trap speed, obviously.
Right. I know that I saw a graphic that said that the top speed of Sachsenring was actually set by Troy Bayliss in 2004, and it was 290. Can you imagine 290 at that track?
Right. Where are you going to do it? I mean, gosh. Yeah. You get up to 290, and wow, there's a big old left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It was probably at the bottom of that hill, or maybe.
Yeah, it must have been something like that, because that's about the, it's not quite the longest straight, but it's pretty close.
I think it was in 2006 they were talking about gear ratios and that, for example, Rossi was riding, shifting through the sixth on the track and nobody else was. Everybody else was going up to fifth and staying in fifth. And he wanted to have that extra...
little drive, that extra room to play.
His gears were a little closer together, obviously.
Yeah.
His sixth wasn't higher than their fifth or anything like that. It wasn't going 11 on Nigel Tufnell's amp or anything like that. You know?
It goes to 11.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's all the riders I wanted to mention, except that there was an interesting little incident. Because you mentioned about Lorenzo spoiling Rossi's lap during qualifying.
Well, yeah.
So we had that incident when Tony Elias was getting lapped by Rossi.
Yes.
And he did not get out of the way. And then after Rossi finally managed to pass him at the bottom, it took him a long time. And Rossi lost about 3 seconds off Stoner and then actually ended up gaining him back, which is pretty
very impressive.
Impressive. Yes, he got him at his favorite passing place, you know, the bottom of the hill. And then as soon as he passed him, he made a very like angry gesture, like,
oh, yeah,
get out of the way next time, you know, like
there was a lot of arm waving and head shaking. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was, you know, it was like, you know, a turnaround look, big old arm wave of like, you know, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. And then farther on, still, Rossi's back on like on the next straight and he's shaking his head. It's like, I can't believe that guy did that to me.
Right. You know? Right. And they have such a great, you know, history of calm racing together.
Of what racing together?
Well, Tony Elias, you could say quote cost Rossi the 2006 championship twice.
Yeah. Yes. You know? Yes. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. I just you're right, because
lost.
Say again?
No love lost. And Tony Ellis is actually kind of a jerk, because he did the same thing to he was acting like a little bit like a jerk, because he did the same thing to Vermeulen and to De Angelis. He just didn't get out of the way. At the very end, he was racing with them.
Right. I wanted to bring that up for the you know? Yeah, these guys, Vermeulen and De Angelis, are battling for third. And realistically, I think De Angelis, you know, Vermeulen was in front, but De Angelis had a chance. And yeah, Elias was a big old spoiler in that. He didn't change the results, but I think that, you know, had he just gotten out of the way, it would have made life easier for both those guys.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So the thing is that's interesting is that watching the MotoGP feed, they were just saying, oh, I can't believe Tony Elias is not getting out of the way. He's got the blue flag waving. Okay, in the rain, he's probably not concentrating on
the blue flag,
flags,
right?
You know, especially since he's not going to win the race or anything like that. He doesn't have to. He's just head down, just trying to, you know, get better lap times. His future is on the line on whatever. He's not just sitting out there for fun. But anyway, that's his job as a racer, is to get out of the way when he's getting lapped, right?
Right. I mean, when he's lapping 3 seconds a lap different than Valentino Rossi. And I'm looking at the lap analysis and stuff, and like his position behind Toseland, who was in front of him. And his lap times were by and large quite similar to Toseland. And that's what he would have been being told about on his pit board.
Right.
You know, they probably wouldn't have been saying, if he had even had time to look at his pit board, they wouldn't have been saying, you know, Rossi's lapping three seconds a lap ahead of you, you know, that kind of thing. So here's
an interesting thing. So I watched the MotoGP race live, then I watched the Eurosport about 4 or 5 hours later. And there, Neil Spaulding came on, and he was saying, you know, the reason why. Like, they weren't at all surprised, because what Neil Spaulding was saying is, you know, Rossi's Yamaha is extremely quiet. It's a very quiet bike this year, and it's actually quite hard to hear it coming up on you. And that's why I think maybe Lorenzo got caught by that as well.
It's a little surprised. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Rossi has in the past, he doesn't like a loud motorcycle.
Yeah, he's always said that. He likes to be able to sneak up on people.
Yeah. You know? I always thought he prefers to ride in peace.
he wants to be able to hear the other bikes.
Yeah.
You know, so that he doesn't have to turn his head all the time. or use pinboard or whatever. Anyway, yeah.
That Tony actually makes a lot of sense.
Kind of maybe off the hook for that one, but it was obvious that he was still racing Vermeulen and De Angelis, and those guys are not on quiet bikes. I mean, the Suzuki and the Ducati are both very loud bikes. I mean, the Honda are very loud bikes, and
he wasn't
that guy has a little too much spirit sometimes. It's like, you know, dude, you're being lapped, okay?
Right, get over it. Don't and get out of the way. Guys. Yeah, he wasn't falling all over himself to get out of the way, which in MotoGP, granted, is not a customary thing. We don't always see lapped riders. You know, it's not like the AMA where they lap half of the field, and it is sometimes it might be a little bit of a surprise for these guys, but still, it's like, dude, get out of the way.
Yeah. Yep.
So why don't we, since we were all over the map on our little thing, which is fine because I've enjoyed the call. I thought it was good. Why don't we run down real quick the race classification and anything that pops up we can mention, and that way we'll say that we actually had a race report.
Sure.
So Casey Stoner won the race. A spectacular performance. Had Pedrosa not crashed, you know, and in the alternate universe, then I think Pedrosa, his, you know, if he had not crashed, no, Stoner could not have caught him.
No. In fact, Stoner said so.
Yes.
Stoner was like, there was just absolutely no way he could
maintain that kind of pace. Right, right, right. But he obviously set his own pace, and obviously Pedrosa's pace was too much. Pedrosa pushed too hard. So whatever. Stoner won. Awesome, awesome performance from him all weekend long, like you said. Valentino Rossi came in second. This puts Rossi back first in the World Championship classification, because since Pedrosa scored no points, Rossi closed up that gap that we had last weekend.
Well, he was only 4 points behind.
Now he's 16 points ahead. Right, right. I was just looking at my chart. Yeah, and which, you know, so valuable points for Rossi. He's got a 16-point lead over Pedrosa, which with seven races left, or no, excuse me, eight races left, it's, you know, it's 16 points. What the hell? But this is nobody's championship at this point.
Well, more importantly, Danny Pedrosa is hurt. Even if he races at Laguna Seca, and I hope he does, even if he races, he's going to be racing hurt with the left hand, the clutch hand, you know, giving him a lot of trouble.
Right, right. And a lot of heavy braking zones, which are going to put weight on that
exactly.
hand.
He's going he's going to be, he's not going to,
it won't be tip top
significant points.
Right, right, right. I mean,
if he is, it's going to be a miracle. Which he, no, it's not impossible, but it does mean that, I think coming out of Laguna Seca, we're going to see Stoner in second.
Probably because Stoner is only 4 points behind Pedrosa. So yeah, I think you're right. I mean, that's pretty much a no brainer. That Stoner will be ahead, I think, because
and you know, if things keep going for Stoner the way they are, he's going to be closer to Rossi as well. Rossi needs to do really well at Laguna Seca,
right? Which he's capable of. The Americans,
yes, he is.
The Americans are all going to be, as usual, spoilers for Laguna Seca because of their experience and this and that and the other and blah blah blah. But every year that we come back,
this is the fourth year they're going to be here. So.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Is every year we come back to Laguna Seca, that gap is closing, and you know, you can't say now that, oh wow, look, you know, Nicky Hayden's going to run out there and win the race. Because
we've got Christopher Newland, who's totally capable of it. We've got Danny Pedrosa. If he wasn't hurt, I would put him as a very good contender to win the race.
Right.
We've got. Well, Marco Melanchi's not going to figure, I don't think,
not this year.
But the fact that he was able to do that, you know, after 3 years at the track, just shows you just how fast these guys pick these things up.
Especially, you know, about the complaining that Melanchi did the first year, how much he hated it.
Yeah. Exactly. He didn't even finish the first lap of the race that year, so he only really had two races there.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And all the practice sessions and stuff. And I mean, he flat out said this track sucks.
Yeah.
And, and then he goes out and wins it a couple of years later. So,
well, not wins, but
you know what I mean.
Let's go to podium.
Yeah, on the podium.
Third place.
Yes, something along those lines. And thank you.
Third place with a broken ankle, so that's pretty damn.
That was awesome. Win. That was so. That was, like I said, that was the performance of the race to see him. You know, because you saw the crash. You know, it's like cartwheeling through gravel. It's like, oh my god, that's not a good one.
Yep.
And the whole carrying onto the podium thing and all of that. So we're digressing again, but going down the race classification, let's see, we covered Stoner, Rossi in second, Christopher Mullen in third.
Well,
fantastic.
So before we get off Rossi, sorry. Rossi was so unbelievably lucky this weekend because the bike was just not working. He was just not melding with the bike. He was frustrated, which is always a bad way to start a race. The rain thing, actually, for once, because he's not a real rain rider.
No, he's not a rain specialist.
But he's not a specialist, and he's not bad in the rain. It's just that
it doesn't make him shine. It's not like all of a sudden he's better. You know, yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah,
I think in the dry he would have been off the podium. So he got really lucky, I think.
You think so? Really? You...
I really do. Huh. I think if it was, if it wasn't for the rain, I mean, I wanted to see him on the podium, but I just didn't see it happening. There was just a lot of guys out there that were faster.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess the qualifying and all the practice sessions kind of demonstrated that. Yeah, and he did. You know, he had some luck. You make your own luck much of the time.
Yep.
But he, yeah. Good point.
The weather played into his hand, I think, this time, and yeah. And you know, he's, it's extremely important considering that that Stoner won the race, because he could have lost more points to Stoner, and
right.
Given Stoner that few that couple of races less to take over.
Yeah, exactly. And I hope that, you know, just there's my MotoGP fanboy status. You know, we've got the 8 races left, and I hope it doesn't sort of turn into a runaway with a championship. You know, if Stoner wins and Rossi does not like finish second, you know, it could be easily, well, it could be one race, but it realistically could be, you know, 2 or 3 races kind of a thing. And Stoner's got a commanding lead.
Yep.
And starts, all you're going to do is see that commanding lead get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger kind of a thing. And I'd rather not see that. I'd like to see the race go down. It'd be fantastic if it goes all the way to Valencia and we're still in doubt. Yeah, that's the best situation. But I certainly don't want it decided by, you know, Sepang or something stupid. I mean, it's
right.
Just,
you know. A friend of mine put it really well, though. He said all three riders now had crappy race, right?
Yeah.
They had Stoner had France where the bike gave up.
Yes. Very unusual.
And, yep. And we had Rossi at Assen, and then Danny at the Sachsenring. So all three had these bad races, and Stoner had, you know, you could say that Estoril, he probably could have gotten an extra spot if it wasn't for that hanging camera. He did okay.
Yeah, the hanging camera thing.
Despite it.
Yeah. He didn't do all that well at Spain, though, either.
But Jerez was, what my friend's point was, that Jerez was not like a mechanical failure of some sort. It was just, he's just not good at that track. So basically,
yeah.
The championship now really reflects what's going on again.
Right, right.
And I think that the fact that Stoner has 4 wins and Rossi has 3 is indicative of the fact that it's Stoner who's on up and coming, and Rossi's going to have to be defending for the rest of the season.
Right, right. Stoner's going to be adding onto his trophy room. You know, get the little sort of trophy house outside behind the big house. Like, you know, I mean, because he is, he really is. I mean, I think they've turned a corner somewhat, and it's not like he's done poorly all year long. I mean, you look at his results, and it's podium, okay, 5 points, that's awful. 10 points, that's not too good. 16 points, he's on the podium. DNF at France, that's not good. Podium,
well, no,
podium,
did,
podium, win, win, win. You know, he's the guy is consistent. You know, he's doing consistent. Like you say, they've all had their bad race. And if they're only allowed one bad race a season toward a mindset, then, you know, let's sort of see what's going on from there.
Yep.
But, so, okay. And actually, while we're digressing, because we're still not going down our race order, I did want to bring this one up. Bridgestone versus Michelin in the rain.
Bridgestone
here.
Just kicked ass. Holy
yes.
Cow.
Yeah. So apparently Bridgestone's got the rain tires right, because it was a colossal difference.
Actually another very, very interesting commentary on Eurosport. Again, Neil Spaulding was talking about, Randy Mamola went out and started and was able to catch up with the Michelin director for the race, who was in charge of kind of forcing the riders which tires to use. They were afraid to give the soft tires to the riders, because they were afraid that they were going to fade at the end. So they were, every single guy out there was a mediums, whereas Bridgestone went for a softer compound in the back.
Right. And obviously they didn't have a huge fade problem. I mean, you look at the lap times and they were doing fine. Yeah. Because Stoner had a big old problem with rear tire fading last year.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
He may have had that problem if it was dry. I mean, it's a completely different tire. So
that's true too. You're right. I mean, but still, the Bridgestone versus Michelin war. And I'm looking at his last lap. The last lap of the race was a 134.184, which is
which included a wheelie.
Exactly. Included a wheelie and all of that kind of business going on. And he actually didn't set a time into the 134s until lap 11. All of his previous laps were no better than 135.
36s, 35s. Yeah.
So, and even that was 134.713. So his last lap was faster than his 11th lap. And, you know, he didn't, it wasn't his best lap of the race, but like Joel said, he has a wheelie. So,
yeah.
All right.
Okay, sorry.
Let's go down our list. Chris Vermeulen, like we agreed, fantastic race. He's a wet weather guy. He may not want that that
moniker. Let's change this. Let's change this. Actually, let's just not call, say that he's a wet weather guy. He's just a guy who is on who is
consistently always about there.
No. Hang on a second. So he's a guy who if you were giving all the racers the same exact equipment, he would be higher up than he is right now. Let's just put it that way.
There you go. That's actually a very good way to put it.
Yeah, and I think that the rain simply just underlines that.
Right.
It's not that he's a great. I mean, he's just all around a good rider.
He is. He's one of the top 18 in the world. And let's face facts: all of these guys are extraordinarily good. And you can make an argument for particular individuals that maybe, well, you know, if it wasn't for politics, if it wasn't for money, then so-and-so would have a MotoGP ride as opposed to, you know, this other guy and that sort of thing. But you're starting to split hairs at that point, you know, and these guys are all deserving of their ride. It's not like Formula One where you can come in and wave around bags of cash and get a ride. Actually, sometimes it is like that. Who was that guy a few years ago? But
yeah.
You know, but these guys are all, I mean, they may bring stuff to the table. They might, you know, I have sponsorship. I am French. I am whatever it is. And bring these factors to the table. But it still boils down to that the primary qualification is that they're excellent motorcycle riders. And that's why they get a ride.
You were going to see something at Cordoza, weren't you?
Yeah, that was the name. See, he's gone and forgotten, you know, it was two or three
Chunky
years ago.
Boy.
So, yes. but, you know, it's not like I say, like you see in Formula One, where it simply is that this guy just brings enough money to the table. And whether it's his own money or sponsor money or whatever, it's a guy who is clearly not qualified to race with the likes of the tip-top in the world. Yet, because he has the money, he does. You know, it's called buying a ride. Yeah, and
who's like that?
I'm not so sure. I haven't been following it as closely this year. There may not be any perfect examples of that this year, but Narain Kartikeyan was like that. Was that last year?
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
And you know, simply, you know, he's Indian. He's got all kinds of backing and this and that and the other. And this is not any sort of, you know, nationalistic remarks or anything like that. But the guy was there because he had the money behind him. And, you know, they buy a ride. All right. Alex De Angelis, excellent performance. Came in fourth position.
He said he learned a lot. This is a funny comment. He said he learned a lot from his crash at Assen. I was like,
Yeah.
And, okay.
it's up there with his best finish of the season, which was, Mugello. And other than that, he's been, you know, these are both good finishes. You know, to finish fourth is a big deal for Alex De Angelis this year.
Yeah, he was actually great all weekend.
Yeah,
he was up there. Except for the qualifying, his pace was fantastic all weekend. His qualifying was actually like the worst part of his race.
He might be in some ways, because if I recall, I mean, he DNF'd at Assen, but wasn't he sort of not doing poorly, kind of a thing?
No, he was doing pretty well.
He sucked? Okay, so I'm wrong. Forget it. Andrea Dovizioso finished fifth. Also a decent finish for him. He's actually getting quite used to finishing fifth because that's where he's been the last three races.
Right.
You know, but realistically on the team that he's on and the equipment and all of that sort of stuff, I think he should be actually pretty satisfied with that result. You know, maybe not overjoyed, but certainly not unhappy.
This is the first race where the top Honda, by the way, was not Pedrosa.
No, yes.
It was
no
actually De Angelis
and
De Vizioso.
Mm-hmm.
But De Vizioso, because Colin Edwards crashed, is now only 8 points from fifth position in the championship, which is pretty big. And Lorenzo crashed also, so he's catching both those guys.
Right, right. Yeah, Top Honda was DeAngelis. But, yep. Yeah. Okay. Sylvain Gattoli almost cut our French friend, out of the running there. Finished sixth. Excellent finish considering the year that he's been having.
It's important to note that Dovizioso was almost 30 seconds behind DeAngelis, but Gattoli was catching up to Dovizioso. His final lap times were, a second or a second and a half faster than Dovizioso, so a couple more laps.
And he would have done it. Yeah, he was doing really well. He seems to be a bit of a wet weather guy, apparently. And I'm not familiar enough with his riding and his career and all of this to sort of know that, yes, he's a wet weather guy or anything like that. But he certainly did well here and much better than he has done all season long. Because, let's see, this...
Well, the last two times he figured in races was at Le Mans last year, where he led the race for a little bit before crashing.
Right.
And at Motegi last year, where he was looked like he was going for a podium.
On a different motorcycle. But also completely different tires. Shit tires. Crap tires. So for this year's stuff, this is his best finish by miles. I mean, he didn't, he got 6 points in Assen. That's quite a big difference. That's four positions. You're looking at sixth versus tenth. Yeah. So, we know he's talented. And I said, and I was somewhat called to task for that he's a little bit low man on the totem pole in some ways, right? And I still think he is. And I'm not saying that in an aggravated way. These are the 18 best riders in the world. But there still is the very best, and then there's the guy who's number 18, for whatever reason. And someone has to be at the top, and someone has to be at the bottom. And I'm just pointing out that I think Sylvain Gattoli is one of the guys that's in the lower section. Even though, like I said, very friendly guy. He's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. And Sipo has been saying that they're looking at Callio, and they're looking at Canepa, who's been their test rider and really doing a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. They may end up, those guys may be stepping up. And now that Dantin is gone from
weird team, isn't it? I mean,
did you mention that?
I mentioned it briefly on the last show, right in the news, because it just happened as I was recording the thing, but we didn't sort of discuss any of the ramifications and all of that. I still haven't got a lot of the where's and why for's about it because those haven't been released, and they're not likely to be.
Well, the only thing we know is that the Pramac bought complete rights to the team, and there's provisionary management right now.
Right, right. So there's a shakeup going on in the Pramac Alice team.
But anyway, so the thing is that it sounds like Ducati is going to really start taking care of their satellite team a little more closely because they're going to be picking the riders. It almost sounds like Gasuppo is the one saying, oh, yeah, we're going to bring Callio in, we're going to bring Canepa. Hey, Nicky Hayden's looking like, and we're very interested in Nicky Hayden.
Right. And so that actually, if they can do that, if they can get into that position, I think that's a good place for Ducati to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A good thing. If they can have when you say satellite team, that it means satellite team. It means okay, you guys aren't the full factory, but we still want a big say in what you do. And right. I think we have that relationship this year with Factory Yamaha versus Tech 3, more so than we've had in previous years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And this is reflected in Colin Edwards' performance. Colin Edwards having his best year in MotoGP ever.
If it wasn't for these two crashes, man.
I know. He's on fire. I mean, at least, the bike is not on fire. That's a big start for Colin. And, and he doesn't have to be, second fiddle to Rossi, which, although it's facts are facts, it suited him very well. It's still, but now, it's a little bit of a dichotomy or whatever it is, where he's on the other team, but hey, he's got full factory support, et cetera, et cetera. Right. It's a good thing. So if we can see that happening with Ducati, that would be a good thing as well. Let's see who's next on our list. Loris Caparossi. Yeah, seventh position in the race, Loris Caparossi.
He and De Puna had a fantastic race that I wish we could have seen a little bit more of because they swapped positions a couple times. And at the very end, they were pounding fists together. So they must have had a really enjoyable race together.
That's good. That's good to see to hear. So yeah, good stuff there. He did, you know, he lost positions to guys who Caparossi was getting past. But he's also, he's never been a super, super strong in the wet guy.
No.
You know, he apparently that whole liking the wet better than the other guy sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. Randy Pena came in eighth. Good result for him. Didn't crash. That's an excellent result. And where is he at? Even though he screwed up my picking. So this is his best result all year. So that's good for him. Shinya Nakano?
Of course. He's ninth.
Yes, exactly. Pretty much average result for Shinya Nakano. So he's becoming the ninth place odd specialist. And that's pretty much where he shows up. Ant West, 10th. This is also one of Ant West's best. You know, he finished 10th at Donington. But other than that, you know, we've had an extraordinarily spotty season for Ant West.
But you have to give the guy credit. He finished 10th after crashing.
Yes, so exactly. That is true.
It's not like he like slowed down or ran off. Mm-hmm. He actually crashed, had to pick the bike back up.
You're right. I should have mentioned that because he would have. Where was he when he crashed?
It's seventh or something like that.
He was up there and he was making up ground. Yep. I'm trying to find my lap chart. He would have done better, much better, obviously, had he not crashed, and he probably would have been, you know, well, top seven, certainly, top five, possibly, that kind of thing. He did well.
Right.
Because he's a bit of a wet weather guy. Next finisher, James Toseland. Not a wet weather guy, apparently. But did you see that pass that Wes made on Toseland?
No, I guess I did.
Oh, the one, it was, I mean, it was like, you know, handlebars touching dead. It was awesome. It was fantastic.
Was this at the very end of the straight? Going to the first corner?
Yes, I believe it was.
Okay, I do remember something like that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good pass. It was like, you know, full on, you know, quite, you know, no holds barred, but not also not, you know, fairing, bashing, get out of the way. You know, I mean, it was a very, very, very close pass, touching and all that sort of thing. But right. Not that that's the James Toseland advantage or anything like that. But he ran, you know, he's not all that great of a wet weather guy because for James, this is a relatively poor result. When he finishes the race and scores points and all of that sort of thing, this is one of his lower races.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Elias, got lapped twice. But got lapped by four guys. Sorry. You know, I saw him get lapped on TV twice.
Yeah, Toseland actually only got lapped at the very, very, very end.
Right.
Because you could see him and Stoner and... I don't know if did Rossi pass him? I don't know. I know Stoner passed him, obviously, but I think Rossi may have passed him too. That's right. And then we saw Toseland just in the background. So he just barely missed not getting lapped.
Yeah. Yeah, it was...
I said, it's a very short trek. It's a lot of laps. It's the most laps you'll see. Actually, no, Laguna Seca has the most laps, 32 to 30.
30, but still, 30 laps 30. Over a short track like that, especially in the rain, you're going to get lappers and backmarkers. It's inevitable, yeah.
Even with short field.
Right, yeah, exactly. And then Nicky Hayden finished last in the points, 13th spot, two laps down. Had mechanicals and all of that good stuff. So, you know, poor old Nicky, his season continues to deteriorate.
Yep.
Not classified. Colin Edwards, last of the crashers. And he, you know, said to himself, it was just like, well, you know, just found the limit.
There's no images or video of what happened. There's just a video of him already sitting on top of the bike riding down the hill.
Yeah.
Kind of like a toboggan style.
Unfortunately, yeah, the camera was in the totally wrong place at that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marco Melandri, or as Greg White called him, Mark O. Melandri. And
are you serious?
Well, kind of. He sort of Mark hesitated. I shouldn't make fun of him for that, but it was funny. Because I kind of thought, oh, Mark O. Melandri, Ireland's great hope for the MotoGP. So, you know, but it was just a bit funny. But Marco Melandri, in any case, Marco, our... Yeah, I don't know.
Crashed. That would have been his second best finish, probably.
Yes. He's doing well. He was doing real well, and it was sad to see him crash. It was a bummer.
And it was actually really sad to see him sitting there in the sand.
Yeah.
After the crash. He's just sitting there just like, I can't believe this.
Yeah, it's like, what do I got to do this year to get a halfway decent result? Yeah, poor old Marco. It's a bummer because he's better than that.
Yeah.
Danny Pedrosa, we discussed that crash in detail. And I'm not sure because Danny is not normally a guy to be overly pushing it and stuff like that. It was, I think, if anything, it was a little uncharacteristic. I think is a safe way to say it.
I would actually also say that it was just unlucky.
Yeah, you know? Sure, it's always unlucky.
If you look at the way that the crash happened, it's like he just didn't see it coming at all. It's not like oh shit, here it comes.
And that's true. It just kind of happened in an odd way. Yeah,
he's like looking through the corner, and suddenly the front end just folds, and it like really just left instantly.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Folded. There was no recovering from it or anything like that. Yeah. So unfortunate for Pedrosa. Hopefully he's not too hurt. I would like to see him race at Laguna Seca, so we'll have to see if he does or not. And on Jorge Lorenzo, we talked a little bit of his
almost
crash.
Finished two laps.
Yeah, yeah. We talked a little bit about his crash, but did we go into great detail on it? Because
it just looked like a unfortunate mistake. You know,
yeah.
Screwed it up.
Yeah. And that covers it. And then obviously we had John Hopkins that wasn't even here this weekend because he's got obviously injuries going on. So there we go. That was Sachsenring. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good race.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I really did. Somewhat what we're seeing this year. Yeah, there might not be a big old battle for the lead, but if you look a little farther down the order, there's a lot of quality racing going on. And I think Sachsenring was like that. And the fact that it was a truly, really wet race. No screwing around of this, it might be wet, it might not be wet, and let's bring the bike in to change the tire or change bikes for different tires and all that sort of business. You know, this is a wet race through and through, which is interesting. And it shakes things up a little bit. So I enjoyed it.
Yep. So the Laguna Seca is going to be very exciting because I don't remember a year during which the championship was so close while we were at Laguna Seca. So it's not going to be just like watching racers and going, interesting.
Right.
For this race, it's actually going to be really interesting for the championship, extremely interesting for the championship. So
that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to it. And
obviously, so am I.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're going to have a lot of fun. And after this, I think that nothing's changing in a week's time. These guys are busy. In fact, I was talking to Liam's friend Michelle today about something totally unrelated to Liam, and it turned out that she was picking him up at the airport. So they're already here, and there's going to be no development, obviously, of bikes or anything like that between.
Oh no!
So whatever the packages look like in Sachsenring, that's what we're getting in Laguna Seca. But then there's this 3 week period the guys take a quick break before Brno, and it's just the so-called summer break, and a lot of development happens. And I think that that's why Laguna is going to be so critical because we're going to have the second part of the season. Well, the last part of the season, those last seven races are going to be, with some tweaks from the first part of the season.
Right,
that,
right.
That's
right.
Ending right now.
Yeah. Laguna is the end of the beginning, if you will. And you're right that they not only don't have any development time or anything like that from Sachsenring, but I mean, parts can be an issue and stuff like that because they basically load the planes and go.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They would probably pack them ready to go, Sunday at 5 p.m.
Right, and after a wet race at Sachsenring with all those parts flying around that we saw, I hope that they are good, ready to go on parts. So
right. That was the great... on Eurosport, on Liam Schubert got a nice little mention from Toby Moody about during qualifying when I think it was Tony Elliott that crashed, and he was saying, oh, there's Liam Schubert, the parts guy, and they're going to need a lot of parts.
Yeah. And there was actually qualifying at Soxenring was kind of cool because at one point Hayden was coming around, and Rossi was on an outlap, and Hayden was on a not a major hot lap, but he was on a hotter lap. And and it kind of, you know, lit him up next to Rossi and you know, lots of clouds of smoke and stuff like that. And they cut to a shot of the garage and, you know, showed – they actually showed Stoner's
the Ducati
laughing.
Garage, well, yeah.
Yeah, the Ducati garage, yeah.
Yep. And all the mechanics are like, whoa, yeah, that was a cool move.
Yeah, right on, Nikki, go for it, kind of a thing. Yeah, so, you know, these guys have fun. And they are – there's a lot of, you know, they're – these people work together, and you know, of course, there's obvious friction and rivalries, and you know, I don't really like that guy. You know, you get 18 people together, and it's not just 18; it's I don't know how many hundreds of people, but you know, it's a bunch.
And I don't know if there's anyone who actually dislikes Nikki Hayden, also. So
doesn't seem like it, no, because he's you know, and that's I've been accused of being a fanboy, shocker, for that. But he, you know, he is a likable guy, and so.
And know, possibly, you know, he's going to be teammates with you.
Yes, exactly. Sure, exactly. So Stoner might have been looking at, you know, this is a guy who's going to be sharing my garage next year. Yeah. Or in the satellite garage. We don't know yet. We have to sort of see how things go. Well, all right. As usual, we went a little over an hour. But
Big surprise.
No big surprise. But it was a good call. I had fun. I enjoyed talking with you, Jules. Always do. And I'm going to see you here in just a few days. So we're going to hang out there down in Laguna Seca. It's going to be awesome stuff. And, of course, any of you out there that are listening in MotoGP OD land and all that, if you're going to Laguna Seca, we hope we'll see you too. We'll run into it.
We'll see you on Canary Row.
There you go. Jules is – I don't know if Liam is doing one this year or not because he did something last year. Haven't heard anything.
We could just put – something on the show notes or something.
If something comes up, look on the show notes at MotoGP.com. Look on RideOn2.com. Look on MotoLiam.com, which is Liam's website. There will be sort of an announcement if there is anything going on. And that sounds good. So okay. We will talk to you very, very shortly, and we'll talk to you again on the show not too long after that.
Okay, ciao.
Bye. Thanks again to Jules for taking the time on the phone there. It's always fun to talk to you, and I hope that all of you out there listening enjoyed the conversation as well. Like I said, I enjoy it. Hope you do too. All right. One thing we didn't really cover in that call enough was a sort of Laguna Seca preview. We kind of touched on it slightly, but not a whole lot of in-depth detail. And this is going to be a fairly skimpy and quick Laguna Seca preview because we are a little bit pressed for time this week. But Laguna Seca has been there often enough now, like Jules and I said in our call, that you know all of the riders, that sort of American advantage is very much diminished. So we're going to start seeing performances from the guys like Stoner, Pedrosa, and Rossi that you know this was track that was new for them 3 years ago. But now it's just another circuit on the calendar, so they're going to be well-prepared. They're going to go out there. They're going to do very, very well. It's a short track. It's a somewhat unusual track for the MotoGP circuit. There's a wide variety of different features about the track that make it somewhat unusual. Of course, the main one being the corkscrew and all of that. But it's just it's going to be for some good racing. I really do believe so. And it's just unfortunate that we're missing like John Hopkins will not be racing there because of his injury and that so many of the riders are riding a little bit hurt this year. But it's also a good time for wild card. So we're going to be seeing some interesting stuff going on that. Still no word yet on Roger Lee Hayden. I haven't really found anything out about that. And really, other than that, I don't have a whole lot of preview going on. Like I said, it's a little bit weak, pressed for time this week. But we are going to have a good wrap-up next week all about Laguna Seca. Jules and I will doubtless be talking, and we'll have some other stuff going on, and we'll figure out just all kinds of stuff to communicate with you guys how great of a weekend it was to go down there to Laguna Seca and enjoy MotoGP here in the United States. And, of course, we're looking forward to Indy. Got tickets already, got our plane flights arranged, we've got our place to stay arranged, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to be in Section J of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I was a little concerned about Indianapolis, but a friend from the podcast that lives out there in Indiana says, hey, these guys have been doing a large-scale professional motorsports event for more than 100 years. They really know how to put on a show. And so I'm going to take that to heart, and I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to have a really, really great time. And next, coming up, obviously, in September. So why don't we just say that we'll talk to you again next week after we've been to Laguna Seca and we see who wins and we see what it does for the championship, and we're going to have some discussion about that. We'll have new cool motorcycle sounds to play on the show. We'll have some comments from all sorts of different people. We're looking forward to meeting up with Liam and Toby and all the people that we see in MotoGP, and it's going to be a great old time. So we'll talk to you again next week, and until then, keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down, and stay safe out there. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.